Russ Baker is our guest. He is professor of political science, Rutgers University, PhD, University of Pennsylvania, and so many things, Brookings Institution, everything else that I can't even count them. We are always gratified and thankful, Russ Baker, when you show up and help us on the Congressional Corner, which is one of your areas of tremendous expertise. So thanks for being here.
Delighted, Alan. It always is.
Okay. So let's talk presidency first. What do you make of the primary so far?
Well, I think they've been a surprise to everyone. I mean, this is an event in which people usually are pretty good at calling the shots. All the experts, you know, generally have a pretty good handle on who the front runners are and so on. Everybody's been wrong. And mostly they've been wrong about Donald Trump and his influence on this process. And I think they're still unable to figure it out. Probably won't be until the first returns come in from the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary.
Let me ask you a question. Why does the Republican establishment find this guy to be a threat if, in fact, he's polling and tracking well with independent voters and others?
Well, I think that they're worried about the brand. And, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, American politics is so individualistic that you sometimes have to remind yourself that they're concerned about how the public perceives them as Democrats and Republicans. And if the brand is tarnished, it's sort of like a car company that puts out a defective car, and it becomes something that's a matter of shame. And ultimately, of course, the bottom line is it costs money. Well, in the case of a political party, a damaged brand name really costs votes.
But aren't they, I get the brand part, but aren't they also scared to death that this guy's going to turn on them and not follow the party line and not do the appointments that they want and not fill all of the things that, you know, a political party does when somebody of their stripe wins an election?
Well, I think they're still thinking he's not going to get the nomination and he's not going to be elected president. The thing about Donald Trump's supporters is that they're an unpredictable bunch of people. Yes, they're mostly Republicans, but there are some so-called Reagan Democrats thrown into the mix as well. And I think what's driving the poll numbers is the intensity with which these people support Trump. I don't think the group constitutes an electoral majority, certainly not in a general election. But there's no question but they're driving the Republican primary, and they have steadfastly rejected the people who were designated by party leaders to be the ultimate nominee. And I think the most conspicuous sufferer is Jeb Bush.
Well, he is certainly the guy that we all predicted would, you know, take the marbles. But so much of this is, you are a political sociologist and you know about this. So much about this is the American electorate, isn't it? That those who have gone to college, those who have a certain income level, they're less likely to be Trump supporters. And the people who haven't had that kind of education are saying, I like the fact that he says what he thinks.
Alan, I'm constantly amazed at the number of people who I would not have identified based upon their social and economic status as being Trump supporters. You know, think well of the guy. This is what I think is confounding everyone. Yes, it's true that most of the people who do support him are lower middle class whites, you know, people who have been treated badly by the economy. And Trump has a kind of genius, and I
agree with that.
For tapping into a profound and intense source of frustration and anxiety on the part of certain Americans, and he gives voice to it. That's the most important thing. And every statement that he makes is over the top. Every time he says something that challenges the canons of political correctness, people applaud him and his poll numbers go up. And I think he's really being misjudged in that way. I think in many ways he may be the keenest observer of the frustrations that plague Americans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think you're exactly on target with the PC thing. You know, guys who are, just don't want to be told that they can't say to somebody, a secretary when they come through, nice dress today, you know, without fearing for that. And I think he's tapped into that. I think you're right that it's genius. I don't know that it's good, but it's genius.
Well, I'll tell you, Alan, I mean, I think that the political correctness business has become an issue with people who ordinarily don't even encounter it. You know, being in a university, you encounter it all the time.
Sure.
But I'm constantly meeting people who have no contact with, you know, departments of comparative literature, who complain about political correctness. And it's clearly something that is eating at people, and they feel that it's kind of a suffocating ideology that on the one hand, of course, inhibits people from saying things that truly are insulting, but on the other hand, you know, makes you so gives you such a sense that you're kind of walking on eggs all the time.
Sure. Let me change the subject for a moment and ask you, if he doesn't take it, who does? Who gets to be the candidate?
Well, I think the most likely inheritor would be Ted Cruz. Lately, however, the person I think that he's aimed his fire on now is Chris Christie, who I think ultimately would be a very, very damaged nominee because of Bridgegate. But clearly, Christie is gaining on Trump in New Hampshire. And I think Trump goes after the person who seems to be closing in on him the most. I don't even think he bothers much with Jeb Bush anymore. Jeb Bush is down to 5%. But Christie could be a problem for him in New Hampshire. And Cruz is definitely a problem for him in Iowa. So those are the people he concentrates his fire on, and because he considers them the most dangerous.
And lately he's been yelling about Hillary a lot, Trump.
Right.
And there's got to be a reason for that. I mean, you can almost get inside his head when he does this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's really quite interesting that, you know, that's basically a kind of general election strategy. I mean, he's way ahead of himself because, you know, he's in a sense kind of taken his attention off of his Republican rivals and trained it on Hillary Clinton, and is obviously trying to soften her up in terms of the general election.
Also, Ross, he knows that Republicans don't like Hillary and thinks that that may be some way to get some votes.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. I think if there's anybody who, you know, other than President Obama, who is certainly someone who is, you know, has been a target of a lot of conservative anger and criticism, I think she stands only second to President Obama in their animus and their antagonism. So it's. He chooses his targets very astutely.
Professor Ross Baker is regarded by most of us as the guy who really understands the Congress, the interrelationships between the Congress, the courts, and the presidency better than anybody else. Ross, I can't tell you how grateful we are that you're with us, because you have been called upon by the best of the best, and we consider ourselves that, but maybe not the most powerful. Thank you, Ross, for being with us.
The pleasure, Alan.